Hey, everybody, welcome to Backyard Space Opera Podcast. It's me, Kyle. I am joined by Mr. Cody.
Hey, everybody.
Today, we're going to be talking about WonderCon 2018 and all of our amazing experiences that we had at this last WonderCon in Anaheim, and talk about all the things we learned and all the things that we thought would be worth sharing to people. So, Cody, where do you want to start? I'm going to let you kind of take the lead on this one. To talk about WonderCon, because there were so many things and it was like a lot of stuff going on all at the same time. I guess the first thing, though, before I even let you talk, is I do want to say thank you very much to everybody who stopped by our table and talked to us. We super appreciate it. It was great to meet all kinds of different people. Thank you again, I guess. Just a basic thank you. All right, Cody, you're allowed to talk now.
Okay, thank you. That's what I was going to start with. I was going to start by saying thank you to everyone who came over and said hi or took a card or asked questions, and it was fantastic meeting everybody. So it was great. It was nice to see so many faces, so many people asking about what it is we do. So it was really great, and saw a lot of cool cosplays and took some pictures of people walking by. So it was a pretty good con, all things considered.
And so basically we had our dragon puppet out from a short that I was working on, and we had a bunch of our stop motion puppets out. We had our new stop motion puppet, and you can go to our Instagram account to see that. It's a like a skeleton thing that's about a puppet that comes to life for this new movie I'm doing called After the Flesh. And people were really interested in the dragon puppet. We kind of, you know, we animated and we made him growl and look at people as they walked by, and that was really fun. Kind of like last year, we had our zombie whose hand moved and would reach out to grab people. And this year, the dragon would look at him and snarl. And people thought it was really fun and scared a bunch of kids and got a lot of strange looks as people walked by. So it was a good time. I super enjoyed that part.
Yeah, it was great.
So talk about one of your panels or one of the things you really liked.
Well, I think we should start with a quick synopsis of the panels that we went to. So I think we should go back and forth. How many panels did you attend, Kyle?
You know, that's a good question. I think I attended like four or five.
I attended three panels. And the first panel I went to was Writing 101, because I am trying to be a burgeoning writer, start my book. So any advice that I get is great. And I met with, or I shouldn't say I didn't meet with, but the panel was conducted by Marv Wolfman. Now, I didn't know who that is because I am not in the world of comics. But when I mentioned it to you, you were like, oh my God, Marv Wolfman. Holy, oh man, I'll go to that. Oh man, just to see Marv Wolfman. And I was like, okay, who's Marv Wolfman?
Because you were like, I'm going to go to this writing panel, Writing 101. I'm like, well, you know, it's probably going to be a lot of basic stuff. You already know the basics. And then you're like, it's who is it? Marv Wolfman? Like, well, now you got to go because it's Marv Wolfman.
So Marv Wolfman has been in the business for quite some time. He's created many, many beloved DC characters and Marvel characters as well. So he's responsible for Deathstroke, New Teen Titans, Blade, Black Cat, Bullseye, Cyborg, you know, the list goes on and on and on. So he's been writing for, I think he said his career spanned, you know, 50 years. So it was really great. Took some copious notes as much as I could. And what I walked away with, his main point was to forget all the rules. There are no rules except for one, which is his rule. So
forget all the rules except for my rules.
Exactly. He was talking about the rule of, you know, well, on page this, you know, you need a twist. And on this, you know, when this happens, then this needs to happen. He's like, no, that doesn't, you don't need to do that. But he emphasize the importance of character. And if your story does not forward the character or the plot, you need to get rid of it.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that rule. I think I've heard that rule before, and I think it's a really good one of basically every single piece of your story has one of two jobs, or ideally doing both at the same time, moving the plot forward or moving your character forward through character development arc and his change through the story.
Exactly.
And the best writers can do both of those things at the same time, most of the time.
So it was really great. I tried to catch him after, you know, to pass out a card, be like, hey, but he's pretty fast. And somebody was got there ahead of me and was like, I don't know, oh, I just wanted to, blah, blah. And he's like, well, I'd love to talk, but I got to be in this room right now. And he quickly went away. So rather than run after him, I was like, okay, I'll give him his space.
Where did Cody go? He got arrested for trying to tackle Marv Wolfman.
Pretty much, yeah. And be like, wait, Mr. Wolfman, hang on. Yeah, not good.
Because so I had pushed you to it. I was like, okay, your mission is to get a card in his hand and see if he wants to be on the show. And yeah, you tried, so good job.
Yeah, I tried. If I was successful, you'd buy me lunch or something. So
yeah, that's what
it was. You'd buy me dinner. That was
low stakes. But and before we move on, like, I want to say about his rule too. It's like writing is that thing that there's all kinds of different approaches. And, you know, I know you're saying that you're repeating what he said of, oh, don't worry about rules. And I'm going to throw a caveat on that and saying, I think you don't have to worry about rules. Worry is the key word there. Not don't follow rules, don't use rules to help you, but don't worry about the rules is a different thing.
Yeah, don't. I think it was more of, you know, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to. There's no, you know, it's not etched in stone. Nobody's forcing you to follow these things. If you want to do it and it advances your character and the plot, then by all means, basically pick and choose the ones that are going to help you create the best, you know, the best characters and the best story.
And I'm just going to repeat your advice I heard from other people, though. It really depends on your end product, because I think in different forms that is greater or lesser. And they go, you know, novels and comic books to a lot of degrees have a lot of freedom. Screenplays, if you want to be commercial, really do not. And, you know, if you don't want to be commercial, that's fine. It's not, you know, then do whatever you want. But, you know, it's one of those things you kind of have to know the specifics of the kind of niche you're looking at as well. If you're writing journalists who write certain stories and who are documentary kind of filmmakers and things, there are different ways, there are different rules you have to follow depending upon the ins and outs of the specific thing you're doing. So I don't want people to take away from that saying, no rules, I do what I want, and then wonder why they're not really successful. So that would be my two cents. Do you agree?
I do. So tell us about one of your panels, Kyle.
Well, one of my panels that I was really excited to have gone to was a visual effects panel. And the person who was on the panel that was really amazing to me was John Van Villay, I guess that's how you say it. And I didn't know that, I hadn't really heard of him before this panel. And it turns out he's like done all my favorite things that I didn't even know it was specifically him doing it. So for example, he did the shot in Tron where the original Tron from 82, where the characters transform into the light cycles. And that was such an amazing shot. It's one of those shots you're like, oh my gosh, that's just the coolest thing ever when I was a kid. And he was explaining how that was hand rotoscoped, hand drawn. So basically he said he got footage of the characters leaning over and he got the final shot of the cycle rendered in CGI. And he said, you have 36 frames to get them into this car, 30 frames of them leaning over, and the last frame is them finally turning into the car or the motorcycle. And when you look at that shot, you can see the car kind of being formed and the grid forming around them and all this light coming out, and then it's kind of morphs into the car. And that was all hand done. And basically the way he explained it, and I knew this, but it was kind of neat to hear him talk about it, is they had these hand cells that they would draw on and over the existing frame, and they would layer it. And basically you expose the film and you manually roll the film back a frame or two frames or whatever it was. And then you put the new layer on and you manually roll it back, take another picture, manually roll back. And he said he did 72 passes over the same 36 frames to get that effect. And he said there were so many winding backs of the film that the little notches, the little grooves on the side where the teeth hold the film stock in, that was like wearing out by the time they were done. So like, that's amazing. And it's like, if you screw that up in the middle of it, the whole thing's out. It's like, you got to start all over again.
Yeah.
And you don't even know what you've got until you go develop the film. So that kind of stuff was fascinating to me, of all this old stuff that I love. And now with computers, we basically have the same thing digitized. In Adobe, in After Effects, you have all these layers and you can animate each layer and stack them. So you're essentially doing the same thing, but in hyper fast speed, because it's all digital and in this virtual environment that you can clearly control. So it's just, that was just super fascinating to me. I don't know if I'm the only one, but that was mind blowing.
Yeah. When you told me the different stories and things I want to have you tell our listeners about the Empire idea that he came up with and wound up using that idea in Tron.
Yeah. So he basically was saying how in Empire Strikes Back that he worked on the lightsaber effects, and he gave him the idea that what if there was this energy trail, kind of as they swang the light sword, that this little energy trail would come through. And he said, no, he was told, no, it has to match the first movie. We're not changing it. We're not expanding it that way. He said, that's fine. Cool. But then he said he took that idea, and in Tron, when they threw their disc, he took that same idea. He said, oh, here's where I can apply it. And that's why the disc in Tron have a tail of them kind of burning through the film, as it were, the space.
Yeah, the energy trail, if energy whatever trail. You want to call it. So
that was an idea he originally made for Empire and got shot down, but then transferred it to Tron.
Yeah. Pretty awesome.
And then the last story I'll relay because it was an amazing story to me, was he was trying to talk about how in special effects and visual effects, there's really the importance of being okay with failing, and the importance of trying and doing a lot of things, and then it just totally doesn't work. And that is part of the process. And you can't get it right every time. And in fact, you're going to fail a lot of the time in order to get the few really good stuff. And he gave the example of Raiders of the Lost Ark. In the end of Raiders, when they open the Ark, there's these ghosts that come out. And he said they were given these amazing storyboards showing all these pictures of ghosts and things, and nobody knew what they were going to do. And the effects supervisor was like, I have no idea how this is going to happen. So basically, everybody go out and try something. And this was very expensive, because it wasn't like now where you just go try something and it just costs time. This was them using a motion picture camera, burning film, using lighting, you know, all the time and effort to make these things, and knowing that most of it wasn't going to work or be good at all. And basically he said none of it really worked when they all came back, but he had developed this kind of ghost puppet on a stick that he was playing around with filming with. And it was supposed to be like all wispy and stuff, but he said it looked really stupid. And then he said somebody came by, grabbed his ghost on a stick, and walked over to this water tank that they were using for a different effect, and stuck the ghost puppet stick into the water. And they all looked at it and saw the ghost kind of floating around in this, like, in the water. And they think, that's it. So they basically just turned the camera upside down, filmed the ghost puppets in the water. And that's how they got the shot that's in the movie. So that's fascinating. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Just what you can come up with.
Two wrongs made a right there, where two people, where we learned something from all these things, and now we can make something cool. And it's kind of the same thing I heard from the tutorial on Stan Winston about making plastic bag monsters. And I forget his name who developed that, but he was basically saying, you know, same thing. Like, he was given the time to develop this technique that they ended up using in so many different movies. But if he didn't have that time to do it, they wouldn't have been able to come up with it. All right, moving on. What's the next thing you want to talk about?
Well, the next panel I went to was the Tox Machina panel, which is the after show, if you will, of Critical Role. So,
because you're a huge Critical Role fan.
I'm a huge Critical Role fan. I have admitted that many, many times. One of my dream guests is to get Matt Mercer, the Dungeon Master, on our show. Be fantastic. And so that was a lot of fun. It's always funny. I thought about getting in line for the questioning near the end, but the mad dash to get in line was so chaotic and crazy. I'm like, yeah, I don't really have a question, so it's okay. But it was a good time as always. So, and I have a story related to that, but that comes later. So I'll relay that story after I talk about my next panel. So there wasn't really much. Yeah, I mean, you can watch the panel on YouTube. You just look up Talks Machina WonderCon, or you can see the whole thing. It's about an hour, and it's well worth the watch. There's a lot of great questions and a lot of funny moments. So what was your next panel?
You know, I went to the... What did I go to? It wasn't that memorable, apparently.
Well, I remember you were going to go to the 25th anniversary of the Ultraverse or whatever.
Let me talk about that a second. So yeah. So people may not remember the Ultraverse from a long time ago. It's a series of comics that I can't remember the story. I may be completely making this up, but I vaguely remember there was like some investor from, may have been some foreign investor, saying, we're going to make this comic line. We're going to just really promote it in a lot of ways, push a lot of money into it. And it was a whole new company, and it was had Nightman, and they made a TV show from it and these different characters. And it was pretty neat, but it only lasted, I think, like a few years, and they went bankrupt. But anyways, I was on my way to see this panel just because nostalgia. That's fun. And I passed by this booth, and they had this giant size of like attic sale. Every item was $5, or you get five for twenty. I start digging through this stack, and there's just like tons of great stuff. And they basically, I found this giant stack of Astonishing Science Fiction from the 1940s and 50s. And I'm going through the stack with this other guy, and we're like the only ones who like really know what this stuff is. And you know, not this stuff isn't worth like a lot of money or anything, on top of, but you know, each one's, you could probably sell it on eBay for $20. So it was good price. And I found a Lensman, E.E. Doc Smith Lensman, Children of the Lens from November 47.
That's and cool.
I found all these great authors. I found a Frank Herbert short story that was in one of them. There was Isaac Asimov story. There was a L. Ron Hubbard story in one. And these were all the original. This is how they came out originally. So it was like, this was the way that they were first presented to the world, was through this particular magazine, this little pulp magazine. And these were the original issues. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. So I spent the entire time digging through this stack of pulp magazines instead of going to that panel. But now I have several awesome old Astonishing Science Fiction magazines.
So I even stopped by that booth, but apparently word had spread because it was much more crowded.
Yeah.
What was the other panel you attended?
Well, I attended a couple of panels. What was it? Gosh, what was that other panel I attended? The other special effect one. Oh, I know what it was.
I know you had like two back to back, right?
Yeah. So I went to this other panel, and it was presented by this company, and it had a bunch of visual effects artists, CG artists, and also composers, and had some animators and stuff. And it was fine. It was a little weird in that there was like so many people for this hour-long panel that you couldn't really get a lot of great stories from a technical point of view. So not really worth going into, I think. That's probably why I forgot about it.
Okay.
So, but the other panel I went to, kind of relates to a cool thing that happened, where you just mentioned that you would like to have Matt Mercer on the show as one of your guests. And one of my guests has been on my list. I'd love to have a show is Fawn Davis, a special effects artist. And he does a lot of training videos and things. And I saw that he had a panel on Sunday. And I've actually been to that same panel that he did at Comic-Con, but I thought, oh, that'd be fun to go see. And maybe there's some newer stuff, because there's technology is always updating, and that'd be fun. It's very informative. You went to, I think we were at the Talks Machina thing, and I'm sitting there kind of doing my thing with a dragon head. And I was, and then who walks by the table but Mr. Fawn Davis? And so I, of course, am obnoxious. We're like, are you Fawn Davis? It's like, yes, I am. So, so I got to meet him and talk with him briefly. It was pretty great. He tentatively said he'd come on the show, but we'll see. But that was pretty awesome. I really like that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. The fact that he stopped and talked to you and you, hey, here's my card. I'd love to have you on the show. That's pretty.
Oh, now that he wrote down his email address for me. He's like, here's my email. He's like,
see, there you go. So
that was fun.
Yeah, on the Talks Machina panel was on Sunday, and then I went to another writing one on Sunday. It was later in the afternoon. It was hosted by the Winter Twins, who I had never heard of before, but they'd been at the previous WonderCon, and I guess they did San Diego, and they're on UCLA staff as teachers, or they have a creative writing course, I guess, and they were paired with Todd McCaffrey and Steven Sears. Todd McCaffrey is the son of Ann McCaffrey, creator of the Dragons of Pern, Dragon Riders of Pern, I should say, a series that I've never read. And Steven Sears, who was a television writer, he wrote for the A-Team. He was an executive producer on Xena. I don't know. I was hoping to come away with come away from this panel with much more than I did, but it was mainly just about protecting your intellectual property, and that was pretty much all I got out of it. And just do what you want to do. It doesn't matter, you know. There's no competition, but good luck getting published, because the publishing world has changed, and you'll probably have to self-publish, but then you have to protect yourself, and you know, you have to market yourself. And it, from hearing their story, it was, you know, I walked away with, they were in the right place at the right time. They've been, I don't know, classified or cleared or certified prodigies, because they wrote their first book when they were 12, and they submitted for all these awards and got them. And it's like, well, again, I haven't heard of them, and they were able to get, back when there was bookstores like Borders and Barnes and Noble on every corner, they were able to get distribution deals. So, and now they're paired with Todd McCaffrey and writing with him, and you know, they're kind of changing gears and writing what they want to write about, which is wonderful, and they're, you know, encouraging us to do the same. But at the same time, I just couldn't help but thinking they were in the right place at the right time. Now, writing a book at 12 is quite the accomplishment, but I have a friend who wrote a book when he was 14.
Well, and it's like, you know, you can write a book, but getting it published, even back then, it was really like who you know.
And he was able to get it published.
But I mean, it's like, it's not, I think there's this thing, and maybe it's still out there, and I think anybody listening to the show probably knows it's a myth, but there was always this myth like, oh, if you got published, then what the publisher did is they took everybody's work and looked at it all evenly and said, these are the best. These are the cream of the crop, and we shall choose you. Well, that's not how it works at all. It was basically, what's going to make us the most money? Or I owe this guy a favor, or this guy's great at interviews, let's choose him over him. I mean, it's anybody you talk to who's been in publishing, it's not just a meritocracy. It's anything, well, always anything but a meritocracy. So, yeah. You know, I get kind of, I don't, annoyed's too strong a word, but it's like, I'll go to people who are very famous creators in some field, and they'll tell their story, like how they got started, in hopes that it would help people. So I don't want to fault them for that. But at the same time, a lot of times these stories are, and that's where I met this guy who happened to be this guy, who happened to be this guy. He liked my stuff, and then it went. And it's like, well, that's your lucky break.
It just so happened the convention that they were at selling their books was also attended to by like the chair of Barnes and Noble, who got a copy, liked it, and said, I want to do a distribution deal.
Right. And so the lesson I always take from this, and I want to highlight this for everybody, is it's not about, don't get discouraged in that you don't have your lucky break yet, because what you do have control over is how many times you put yourself out there. To create a lucky break means constantly putting yourself out there, constantly talking to people, networking, going out, and then eventually you have a better chance of getting that lucky break. But it's still a chance thing, but the one thing you can do is how many times you try. So And you just that I think is the message to take from those kinds of stories.
And especially in today's world of self-publishing, is when you self-publish, you basically are your own publicity, and you have to market yourself, and you have to market yourself well, and you have to come across well, and you have to, you know, you have to spend money to make money. You have to attend these types of things to, you know, get the attention and have word of mouth spread.
And when you're talking about that, you know, I want to give kudos and to all the people we talk to in the small press area. There's all these great authors and artists, and we talk to many of them, and we're trying to organize several to come on the show. And we've met some great filmmakers. We've met some great people in the cosplay community, and, you know, we're trying, and right now I'm in the midst of getting as many people I can to schedule to come on the show, because they were all so great to talk to about their different approaches and experiences and things. And I give kudos to everybody there who was really trying to make it work.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And it's great having these other artists, these other creators, you know, authors, however you want to do it, or however you want to say it, just, you know, be able to share their stories with us. It's fantastic.
Well, Cody, what are some final things you want to talk about in terms of what you took from WonderCon 2018?
Well, I had a great time. The panels I attended were great. And I told you I had a story. So here's my story. So coming back from the writing panel with the Winter Twins and Todd McCaffrey and Steven Sears, I'm walking back. And as I'm walking back, there's a group of Critical Role cosplayers that I see, and they're talking, and they're like, "Oh, I can see him. He's over there." And I almost get hit in the face with this this girl's prop that she was carrying around. So I kind of dodge, and I was like, "Oh, I wonder who they could be talking about." So I take the next aisle, and I hustle down, and I come at it from the other way. And who's walking through Artist Alley but Taliesin Jaffe, who's No Mercy Percy, and he's currently playing Molly Mock, the Blood Hunter, on Critical Role. So I'm like, "Oh man, I at least got to get a picture with him." And so I approach him, and he's talking with a couple other fans, and there's a girl standing next to me who's like, "I was like, are you going to take a photo with him?" Or she's like, "No, I just want to say hi." And she's practically hyperventilating, and she's, you know, on the verge of tears. And that's how I feel inside. You know, I feel like a 12-year-old girl at a Justin Bieber concert, like, oh my God. But I'm trying to play cool. So I'm keeping it together. I'm keeping myself calm and collected. And so he finishes talking with one of the fans and signs something for him. And I kind of butt my way in. I was like, "Hey, can I get a quick picture with you?" So I got a quick picture and said, "Oh, and by the way, she'd like to say hi." And I pointed to the girl that was having a panic attack, and I shook his hand and told him thanks and took off. That was really cool.
Nice.
And towards the end of the day, we're running out of time. There's maybe 20 minutes left before the floor closes, and you were coming back from your panel, and I'm like, "Okay, I gotta go do some stuff." So I run over Kevin Grievous, who's the creator of the Underworld with, you know, Kate Beckinsale, the Underworld universe. Those films, he and Len Wiseman created that. He created I, Frankenstein. So a big fan of his. He runs his own comic book company. Always wanted to meet him. So I find out he has a table. So I run over to his table, and I was like, "I would like this, and I'd like this." And he signs some things, and I take a picture with him. And he's couldn't be more nice. He's just great. He shook my hand, said hello, introduced himself. And he's like, you know, in his deep, like, gravelly, fear-inducing voice, you know, said, "I'm Kevin Grievous." And I was like, "Yes, I know who you are." So that was definitely a highlight for me. So
that's awesome. Cool. And I'll take a quick shout to, I ran into somebody, our old friend Bruce, who made those amazing Lensman delaminator props and the giant laser cannons that was at CondorCon, and I got to talk to him more about Lensman stuff, and he's just so enthusiastic about those stories, and he was in his full costume and everything. It was great to talk to him. So
yeah, that was great. He showed me the picture of, like, "Hey, guess who I ran into?" So
yeah, it was awesome.
It was cool to know that he was there. I didn't get a chance to see him or run into him, but yeah, it's great that he was there and you got to talk to him a little bit.
So if you're in San Diego, or you go to a San Diego Science-Fi convention, or a lot of them in LA, the smaller ones especially, you're probably going to see some awesome props that he will bring to those shows. And it's almost worth going to those shows just to see his props, because they are a sight to behold in person.
Yeah, he's done some Star Trek stuff, like the old school original series, type, like a phaser and a communicator and a bunch of other things.
He's done, yeah, so many great things. Super awesome. And then I will give a final shout out to Janet Rossiato, who was there with us. And she was joined us at our table and was talking about her books. So thanks, Janet, for hanging out with us over WonderCon. And again, you can go back and hear the interview with Janet about her Jade series. And she's online as well. Definitely worth checking out her work. And again, there's a lot of great people we met that we're going to be trying to get on the show over the next several weeks and talk more and more about it. So stay tuned for all of that.
It was great having Janet there alongside with us. So it was kind of like a split table, because you had your like therapy thing right in the middle with your parenting book, and then she was on one side, and then we had all our all the stop motion puppets and the creature stuff that we created, the props and whatnot. So, and the beholder that you made me for my birthday got a lot of attention as well. So everybody was like, oh, hey, cool, that's Beholder. Oh, nice. I remember a kid walked up to me, and I was wearing my Choose Your Weapon shirt, and it has the six dice. Not seven, seven is the percentile, but it had the all the sided dice, 20, 12, 10, 8, 6, and 4. And he was like, is that a Beholder? I said, yeah, it's a Beholder. My buddy who does all this stuff, he made it for me for my birthday. He's like, that's awesome. Do you play Dungeons and Dragons? And I show him my shirt. I'm like, yeah, kid, I play. And he was there with two of his siblings and two parents. So it was a group of about five. And so we got to talking a little bit. And so it was kind of fun. And they're like, how long have you been playing? And I was like, a long time.
Longer than you've been alive.
Yeah, it's like 25 years off and on. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, there was a lot of great stuff, and we'll have to wrap up here, because we could keep talking about it for a long time. But thanks again, everybody who came by the table. And we were basically there promoting the new program, trying to get people to be aware of it and if they want to come and try it out, especially since it was an Orange County show. But so again, if anybody is in Orange County, California, and would like to come to our training program, you can go to our website now. It's pretty much, it's been expanded to be more about that program and about how to sign up for it. And we'll be putting up more resources and things as well on that website that can be for everybody. But right now it's just basically about the program, but you can see more there and keep checking it back to see it expand. Email us if you have any questions, if you need help with any of your projects, you want some resources sent to you. I'm happy to do that kind of stuff for people. info@backyardspaceopera.com.
Be sure to like us on Facebook. And I just found out we have an Instagram page. Is that correct?
Yes, we do.
Alrighty. So
I'm actively recruiting my people. I've got a few people who say, yeah, I can help you with posting things. So we'll see if I can start getting more things up there quickly. So like the last post was, I didn't do that. That was somebody else. It looks so much better. It's like all the hashtags are there. And it's like, clearly that was not me. So it was me. I told them what to put, but I didn't actually do it.
Gotcha. Yeah. If you would be so kind, give us a rate and review on iTunes as well. We'd greatly appreciate it. For those of you found out about us at WonderCon, were kind enough to pick up one of our business cards and check us out on iTunes, we greatly appreciate it, and we'd greatly appreciate any feedback you have.
Absolutely. All right, Cody, until next time, we'll see you then.
See you next time, everyone.